12 minutes to news. Adam Gilchrist is on the line from London. Adam, changes to COVID testing requirements in England are being welcomed by the tourism sector.
I'll say, gosh, airlines, airports, travel agents, you name it in particular, they're all happier because 8 hours from now, basically, the rules change for people arriving in the UK. It's pretty rum for the people arriving in the within the next 8 hours. But after that, all those who are fully COVID vaccinated and can prove it will not have to self-isolate at all, will only have to take one cheaper lateral flow test 2 days after arrival, don't have to isolate to that point. And in theory, you get the all clear, you walk. If you don't, I mean, it's still a bookable thing, so it ends up going into the, you know, the stats and the figures. Great news, of course, for the vast majority of jabbed tourists and travellers, including people from the UK who are going off and then coming back. Not so good news, I guess, for Novak Djokovic. In fact, you know, I'm looking at it thinking, can he possibly go to the French Open? Can he possibly come to Wimbledon? Could he possibly go to the US Open? He might have to rethink one or two elements of his lifestyle.
Yeah, just two things on what you've just said there. Firstly, we've got identical changes to our COVID protocols as well, and hopefully that will make it easier for a lot of people arriving into the country. Mm. But secondly, how much coverage is Novak Djokovic's detention getting in your neck of the woods?
Oh, intense. Yeah, I mean, full articles, leading news bulletins on radio, TV. I imagine it'll be, well, it was all over the front pages of the newspapers this morning. It might be again tomorrow. All sorts of stuff about it. I mean, there's, of course, a few details of the case we don't know. So maybe we are slightly jumping to conclusions about, you know, how the medical exemption was given and for what reason and what was the nature of the visa and so forth. But you know what? It is that thing that people have complained about a lot here. One rule for the elite, one rule for others. And it rather looks like a tennis player has rather copped it for the fact that, you know, we've got any number of ministers, government ministers, the prime minister, who've done certain things that the rest of us weren't allowed to do. Well, it looks like Novak Djokovic is sort of paying for their sins.
Yeah, well, the sentiment here has changed. The fact that Tennis Australia facilitated his approval when they were told in the middle of November they have no right to do that on the basis of that exemption that was being applied for. So a lot of answers need to come from Tennis Australia over this. Now, the European Court has ruled on the gay cake case after 7 years of legal action. What is this all about?
It's quite something, this. Okay, this is the story of Gareth Lee, who wanted a bakery in Belfast in Northern Ireland to make him a cake with the words "Support gay marriage" written in icing. He was sort of making a point with his cake. In particular, he was also testing the bakery run by a husband and wife who are, quote, devout Christians, and they cited religious beliefs that they weren't going to do it. So it all went a bit ugly. Gareth won his court case that it was some kind of discrimination, but then he went to the Supreme Court in London and the bakery won the case. But now the European Court has ultimately backed them and ruled against him because he failed to, as they put it, exhaust all possible domestic outcomes. I mean, let's be honest, it's a bit of a fudge. They kind of didn't decide. They said, oh, because you didn't do this and you didn't, you know, dot an I and cross a T, therefore. So a fudge cake case, you could say.
But yes.
Do you know what, Chris? It's like Northern Ireland itself. I mean, how do you reconcile someone who has every right to want something and someone else who has every right to refuse to comply?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the trouble.
That is the trouble. That is the trouble. Now, this is a fascinating case. 100 years on from the death of Sir Ernest Shackleton, there is a new search mission for his lost ship.
Yeah, that's what they're doing, amongst other things. I mean, they're checking out sea ice and so forth, but there is absolutely one that's going to think, hang on, down there is the Endurance, which is one of the great shipwrecks of all time, and it's, of course, in impossibly cold waters off Antarctica. He died 100 years ago, or to be exact, 100 years and one day ago, during his final Antarctic mission, having never reached the South Pole, technically speaking. Not as famous as Captain Scott or Roald Amundsen, who was the first to get to the South Pole, but Shackleton, I have to say, he was largely ignored, including by us, by Britain, for 80-plus years. And he went to my school, obviously a long time before me, but he went to my school, Dulwich College, and there was a small exhibition, I remember, in the library just a few knickknacks, a couple of photos, a map, and I think that his writing desk was there. But otherwise, I mean, it was one of those you sort of discovered in the course of your school career. Otherwise, apart from a little tiny shrine, as it were, in the school, nobody paid any attention until 20 years ago. There's been a complete re-evaluation saying he was a role model leader. He actually cared about the guys he led. He saved their lives when disaster struck. I mean, that famous story of him and his team rowing 1,300 kilometres of stormy, treacherous, freezing waters to get to safety. He was something else, albeit he may not have achieved as much as other people.
Yes, this is terrific. I like that story very, very much. Good on you, Adam. Thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up next week.